The Devil Rides Out by Dennis Wheatley. Read by Christopher Lee. The Duke de Richelieu and Rex Van Ryn had gone into dinner at 8 o'clock, but coffee was not served till after 10. An appetite in keeping with his mighty frame had enabled Van Ryn to do ample justice to each well-chosen course, and as was his custom each time the young American arrived in England, the Duke had produced his finest wines for this their reunion dinner at his flat. Despite their difference in age and race, appearance and tradition, a real devotion existed between the two. Some years earlier, Rex's foolhardiness had landed him in a Soviet prison, and the elderly French exile had put aside his peaceful existence as art connoisseur and dilettante to search for him in Russia. Together they had learned the dangerous secret of the forbidden territory and travelled many thousand versts, pursued by the merciless agents of the Ogpu. There had been others, too, in that strange adventure, young Richard Eaton, and the little princess Marie Lou, whom he had brought out of Russia as his bride. But as Rex accepted a long Oyo de Monterey cigar from the Duke's man, his thoughts were not of the Eatons, living now so happily with their little daughter Fleur in the lovely old country home near Kidderminster. He was thinking of that third companion whose subtle brain and shy, nervous courage had proved so great an aid when they were hunted like hares through the length and breadth of Russia, the frail, narrow-shouldered English Jew, Simon Aaron. "Where's Simon? For years now the three of us have dined together on my first night. Why isn't he here?" "Why indeed, my friend," the Duke repeated. "I asked him and told him that your ship docked this morning, but he declined to honour us tonight. He made his apologies, of course. Something about resting for a bridge tournament that starts—" "Bridge tournament, my foot! He'd never let that interfere between us three. When did you last see him? You haven't quarrelled, have you?" De Richelieu shook his head. "If you were my age, Rex, and had no children, then met two younger men who gave you their affection and had all the attributes you could wish for in your sons, how would it be possible for you to quarrel with either of them? But you fear that Simon's in a muddle, and you're a little hurt that he hasn't brought his worry to you. To whom else would he turn, if not to one of us? And you were in the States?" "Richard, maybe. He's an even older friend of Simon's than we are." "No. I spent last weekend at Cardinal's Folly, and neither Richard nor Marie Lou could tell me anything. They haven't seen him since he went down to stay last Christmas. I can only conclude that poor Simon is in a muddle, as you say, or he would never treat us all like this."
"But what sort of a muddle?"
Rex brought his leg of mutton fist crashing down on the table. "Money," suggested the Duke, "is one thing that he might not care to discuss with even his closest friends." "I doubt it being that. My old man has a wonderful opinion of Simon's financial ability, and he handles a big portion of our interests on this side. It sounds as if he'd gone bats about some woman to me." De Richelieu's face was lit by his faintly cynical smile. "No," he said. "A man in love turns naturally to his friends for congratulations or sympathy, as his fortune with a woman proves good or ill. It can't be that." The two friends sat staring at each other in silence. Rex, giant-shouldered, virile and powerful, his humorous young face clouded with anxiety. The Duke, a slim, delicate-looking man about middle height, with fragile hands and graying hair, but with no trace of weakness in his fine, distinguished face. "Have you by any chance ever heard of a Mr. Mokata, Rex?"
"Nope. Who is he, anyway?"
"A new friend of Simon's who has been staying with him these last few months."
"What? At his club?"
"No. Simon bought a house last February, a big rambling old place in St. John's Wood. He said he wanted a garden, that's all I can tell you."
"Simon, a garden?" Rex chuckled. Simon doesn't know a geranium from a fuchsia, and why should a bachelor like Simon start running a big house at all? Perhaps Mr. Mokata could tell you, murmured de Richelieu, or the queer servant that he has imported. Have you ever seen this bird? Mokata, I mean? Yes. And what did you make of him? I disliked him intensely. What about this servant that you mention? I only saw him for a moment when he crossed the hall, but he reminded me in a most unpleasant way of the bogeyman with whom I used to be threatened in my infancy. What, is he a black? A native of Madagascar, half Negro and half Polynesian, this great brute stands about 6'8". He's a bad black if ever I saw one. The Duke gently laid the long blue-grey ash of his cigar in the onyx ashtray. There is not a doubt, he said slowly, that Simon is involved in some very queer business. But I wanted to hear your views before taking the very exceptional step of butting in on the private affairs of even so intimate a friend. The question is now, what are we to do? Rex drew himself up to his full magnificent height. We are going up to that house to have a little heart-to-heart talk with Simon right now. I'm glad, said de Richelieu, you felt like that, because I ordered the car for 10:30. Shall we go? As de Richelieu's Hispano drew up at the dead end of the dark cul-de-sac in St. John's Wood, Rex slipped out of the car and looked about him. They were shut in by the high walls of neighbouring gardens, and above a blank expanse of brick in which a single narrow door was visible, the upper stories of Simon's house showed vague and mysterious among whispering trees. The Duke pressed the bell and stepped back to view the premises. "Hello? Simon's got an observatory here," he remarked. Rex followed de Richelieu's glance to a dome that crowned the house, as the door in the wall swung open, disclosing a sallow-faced manservant in dark livery. "Mr. Simon Aaron?" inquired de Richelieu, but the man was already motioning them to enter, so they followed him up a short covered path, and the door clanged to behind them. "The fellow's a mute," whispered the Duke. "Deaf and dumb, I'm certain." As he spoke, the servant flung open a couple of large double doors and stood waiting for them to enter. A long, narrow room, opening into a wide salon, stretched before them. Rex clutched Richelieu's arm. "By Jove, she's here," he muttered, his eyes riveted on a tall, graceful girl who stood some yards away, talking to Simon. 3 times in the last 18 months he had chanced upon that strange, wise, beautiful face. Despite her apparent youth, she was as old as sin, Rex caught himself thinking. He had seen her first in a restaurant in Budapest, months later in a traffic jam when his car was wedged beside hers in New York, and then, strangely enough, riding along a road with 3 men in the country 10 miles outside Buenos Aires. How extraordinary that he should find her here. Simon turned towards them. For a moment, he seemed completely at a loss. He recovered almost instantly. "My dear Simon," the Duke's voice was a silken purr, "how can we apologize for breaking in on you like this?"
"Sure, we hadn't a notion you were throwing a party," boomed Rex, his glance following the girl who had moved off to join another woman and 3 men who were talking together in the inner room. "But I'm delighted," murmured Simon genially. "Delighted to see you both. Only got a few friends. Meeting of a little society I belong to. That's all." De Richelieu gave Simon full marks for the way in which he accepted their obviously unwelcome presence. "I'm most terribly sorry about dinner tonight," he was proclaiming earnestly. "Meant to rest for my bridge. I simply have to these days, to be any good. Even forgot, till 6 o'clock, that I had these people coming." "How fortunate for you, Simon, that your larder is so well stocked."
The Duke could not resist the gentle dig as his glance fell on a long buffet which would have rivaled the cold table in any great hotel. "I phoned Ferraro," parried Simon. "The Barclay never lets me down." Rex laid a large hand on Simon's arm and gently propelled him towards the salon. "Don't you worry about us. We'll just take a glass of wine off you and fade away." The Duke noted with amusement that he avoided any proper introduction. "Two very old friends of mine," he said, as he interchanged a swift look with a man whom de Richelieu knew to be Macarta. "Well, well, how nice," the bald man lisped. "It is a pleasure always to welcome any friends of Simon's." De Richelieu gave him a frigid bow and replied that Macarta was most kind. Then he turned his attention to an elderly lady who was seated nearby. She was a woman of advanced age, but fine presence, richly dressed and weighed down with heavy jewellery. She held the stub of a fat cigar. "Madame," the Duke drew a case from his pocket, "your cigar is almost finished. Permit me to offer you one of mine." She stretched out a fat, beringed hand.
"Thank you, monsieur. I see you are a connoisseur."
She sniffed at the cigar appreciatively.
"But I have not seen you at our other meetings. What is your name?"
"De Richelieu, madame. And yours?"
"De Richelieu, a maestro indeed." She nodded heavily. "Je suis Madame Durfay. You will have heard of me?"
"But certainly," the Duke bowed again.
"Do you think we shall have a good meeting tonight?"
"Ho-ho," thought the Duke. "We are about to make use of Simon's observatory, it seems." Simon deftly interrupted the conversation and drew him away. "So you have taken up the study of the stars, my friend," remarked the Duke as his host led him to the buffet.
Yes. Find astronomy very interesting, you know. Have some caviar."
Simon's eyes flickered anxiously towards Rex, who was deep in conversation with the girl.
"It was because of the observatory, then, that you acquired this house?" asked the Duke.
"Yes. You must come up one night and we'll watch a few stars together." He was obviously in earnest, but the Duke was not deceived into believing that he was welcome on the present occasion. He studied the other two men who made up the party. One, a tall, fair fellow whose queer, light eyes proclaimed him an albino. The other, a stout man dressed in a green plaid and ginger kilt, whose wild, flowing white hair and curious costume suggested an Irish bard. Altogether a most unprepossessing lot, thought the Duke, and his opinion was not improved by three new arrivals. A grave-faced Chinaman wearing the robes of a mandarin, whose slit eyes betrayed a cold, merciless nature. A Eurasian with only one arm, the left, and a tall, thin woman with a scraggy throat and beetling eyebrows. Macarta received them as though he were the host, and the tall woman bore down on Simon.
"Well, Simon, all excitement about what we'll learn tonight. It should help a heap, this being your natal conjunction."
"Aha," said de Richelieu to himself. "Now I begin to understand a little, and I like this party even less. Did you say that you were interested in astronomy or astrology, Simon? There is a distinct difference, you know."
"Oh, astronomy, of course. Wish this was an ordinary meeting," Simon said. "Then I'd ask you to stay, but we're going through the Society's annual balance sheet tonight, and, well, you and Rex not being members, you know..."
"Oh, quite, my dear fellow, of course," de Richelieu agreed. "I should have gone before, but Rex seems so interested in the young woman in green. I want to give him as long as possible."
"My dear chap," Simon protested, "I feel horribly embarrassed at having to ask you to go at all."